Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warren Man Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warren Man. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lorddgaul.podbean.com, or you are on the most efficient way to get the podcast, enter Warren Man Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. First of all, I want to apologize for the break. I am doing my first fight promotion, and along with the work that I've had for Glory, I've just been wall-to-wall insane, haven't been able to get the time to really put in the, you know, the work of making this podcast work. Even as I speak, there's a plane going overhead, so every element is against me in trying to make this happen. But I'm here giving you guys that kickboxing action, and of course, it is National Muay Thai Day. I think it's Worldwide Muay Thai Day. So I'm going to go ahead and do something a little special. I'm going to go down a particular list and talk about some of the great Muay Thai fighters, straight Muay Thai fighters of all time. So I'm excited to bring that to you. But first and foremost, I'm going to go ahead and jump into some of the kickboxing action that's happened over the last couple days, or last couple weeks, I should say. First, I'm going to go ahead and start off with the All-Star Fight 7 event that took place in Phuket. I cannot believe how many planes are going over my head as I say this, but whatever. I'm just going to keep pushing. Maybe you guys hear them, maybe you don't. But first of all, All-Star Fight 7 in Phuket. I won't go down the whole card. There's some notables. Zhu Patong gets a victory over Tiger Muay Thai by TKO. Petrpet Imyandun defeats Tigar Sitsong Pinyong by decision. And then here goes a familiar face. Pakorn, now of PK Sanchai Muay Thai Gym, he gets a victory over Victor Sitsong Pinyong. Pakorn, of course, one of the better fighters from Thailand, doing a lot more stuff international here and there, thanks to events like, you know, promotions like Yakao and so on. But Korn's a great, you know, so it's awesome that he gets on the show and he gets a win. Suxerin, Tiger Muay Thai gets a victory over Jay Tonkin. That was a draw. Let me relook at my notes. That was a draw. But the main thing that I really wanted to talk about for this card is Bukao Bachimek getting a victory over Nicholas Larson. Bukao Bachimek, known simply as Bukao or known as Bukao Por Pumruk. It's crazy because it's been so long since he's been Por Pumruk that I barely remember the name. Because I just know him as Bukao and he's been Bachimek and they had that whole big deal with the all of the contracts and all the stuff that they were trying to hold him to and how much he's literally fighting. And by the sounds of it, 90% of the money that he was making was going into his Mr. Pamuk's pocket. So after a long fight, you know, which a fight that I don't think he would have won had it not been for the fact that he was a national figure and the time and what he's done internationally, I don't think that he would have won if it wasn't for that. But even as he goes into his mid-30s, and we're talking about a guy who won his first K-1 World Grand Prix, should he won his second K-1 World Grand Prix more than 10 years ago. You know, like, it's been that long since he's been the fighter that made him who everyone knew. And as he heads into his mid and late 30s, he is still a phenomenal, phenomenal fighter. It just blows me away, because Larson's still a young man game. He's still a solid kickboxer, but Bukao, who, you know, once he gets his full rules Muay Thai, you see all the different tools, the things that he holds back. And I remember I was critical of him when he went to Thai Fight, because I felt like the first Thai Fight tournament where he went against Abraham Aquini, and I thought that, man, he had some good guys. But then all of a sudden, it just became popular for that brand to just put you against guys that you could just absolutely run over. And when that happened, I kind of lost interest in the path, you know, like I lost interest in what he was doing because he was literally blowing out guys who, you know, I had Rob Cox on the show and we were talking about it and he said, man, the guys that he's going against are 10 times, you know, less than the opposition that he's seen in his entire international kickboxing career. All the K-1 guys, all that, these guys are so far less level, but they'll do it because of the honor of getting in there with someone that elite. And when he went through that stretch, I kind of lost interest in him, and a lot of people took him out of their top 10. A lot of people didn't think of him as that great anymore. But every once in a while, you look at the fight with Dylan Salvador, you look at this fight with Nicholas Larson, he'll get in there against a guy who's good, who we pay attention to, and we wonder how he's going to do. And, you know, in particular, because he'll have a loss here and there. Got injured, and he had the loss last year in Infusion. But, man, this guy is all killer. my goodness, when he was looking for the finish, I mean, just his knees, the elbows, the way he you know, he looks to throw his power shots, he still is probably, despite the list that I'm going to give you, the most popular all-time international Muay Thai fighter, even though he did mostly kickboxing. I still feel it's Bukau. I still feel more people know who he is. Sanchai would be number two for me, still a high number two, but I still think Bukau is the guy, like the guy, and he put on the performance. As I'm watching him and he's turning it up and I'm watching how quick he is and I'm watching how strong he is, I'm just reminded that, man, Bukau was a once-in-a-generation type talent. And at the end of his career, he's still able to beat elite guys. It just blows me away how amazing this dude is. He is something. So shout out to Bukau. Definitely good stuff there. And hopefully we see more from him down the road. Going to go ahead and move over to Glory 63 in Houston, Texas, where I was last week. And, of course, a lot of you guys know that I work for Glory Kickboxing. And I work in the talent ops division. And I do a lot with scouting and I help matchmaking and stuff like that. As a team, that's what we do. And I'm part of that team. Had the good pleasure of being there, and there's a lot of good fights. I'm going to go from the bottom up to the main event. Well, no, I'll go reverse. I'll go top down. So, Pechmanrum Kipmunkau gets a victory over Sergey Adamchuk. You know, it's wasn't one of the performances that, you know, really jumps out at anybody. Clearly, they didn't have a lot of the exchanges that people like, and there wasn't a lot of sustained offensive series. But the thing that happened is Pechmanrum gets a title defense after winning the title and Holland last year, the Netherlands. Weren't they in Rotterdam? I think Rotterdam is considered the Netherlands and not considered Holland. I'll have to look up to get my research on that. I found out something about that, and I was told that I said it wrong in the show once, so please forgive me if I made the mistake again. Anyways, Pechmanrum, again, that retained the title, and of course, we're, you know, there's a lot of guys in the featherweight division that, you know, we want to see him match up with next. Sergey Adamchuk, you know, getting the offense that he normally likes to do. He likes to have flurries where he finds offensive spots, and then he likes to drag you into throwing stuff that he could counter. But the blend of southpaw versus southpaw and Pechmanrum being a little bit more patient didn't give the opportunities that we were looking for, or we as spectators the opportunities that we were looking for to have good solid back and forth. So good win for Pechmanrum. Troy Jones goes against Marin Boyd, wins 30-27 in all three cards. First of all, watching these guys fight just shows the skill level and the athleticism of some of the guys at 77 kgs. Troy Jones, I love watching him fight. When I got this job, he was one of the first guys that I was able to get a Glory contract. And watching him go out and score with the beautiful, when he goes to southpaw position or southpaw stance, he really ripped a good left hook to the body, scored good with his hands. And the orthodox, he had a good flow. He'd find a low kick here and there, stream together his offense. Omari Boyd, same thing. He's always had that really good switch kick. He let his boxing go on spots. I thought that he fought a good fight. Just thought that Jones did enough in every round to score more, and he really sustained a good long series of offensive spots. You know, spots where he would score like, you know, 6 of 10 shot attempts, you know, like he just had moments where it was just him throwing. So Jones, you know, very good fighter, excited to see what happens to him down the road. Mari Boyd, still one of the better fighters in America. I expect him to still go out and compete against the best Americans and good international opposition. So good stuff by both guys. Richard Abraham defeats Charles Rodriguez, 29-28, two cards, 30-27 on the other. You know, this fight kind of comes down to what you like. Richard Abraham, you guys hear me use the term on the show all the time. He's really good at the sexy shots. And by the sexy shots, I mean the shots that you remember in a round. Like, he throws power and he sets up moments. And even if it doesn't score clean all the time, when he throws, if it lands on a shoulder, if it lands on the neck, he's throwing heat. You know, he's trying to put you on your butt. He didn't have spots where I thought that he got into good kickboxing flow. I did think that he had got spots where he walked Charles down and was able to throw and flurries that had power in them. But, you know, he didn't get into his kickboxing flow like I'd seen in the past. Still more of a walk down, look for power game. Charles Rodriguez, I think, was a little bit different than what I'm used to seeing from him. Normally he plays a good combination low kick game, really, really steady and heavy in the low kicks. And in this fight, I think that he had moments where he did it and then moments where he abandoned it. I think maybe he was determined to win the boxing. But, you know, just kind of from the outside looking in, I think he wanted to battle or challenge himself there against Abraham. And really, it was a close fight. I would have been happy with whatever winner. But Rodriguez had game effort but came up short against Richard Abraham, who continues to be one of the better U.S. fighters in the Glory roster. Next fight I'm going to talk about is Wing Chun Zhang as he gets a victory over Lant Nelson. Tale of two halves. Basically, Zhang, who fought in a smaller weight class when his Glory debut, comes out and he has a really good start offensively. Nelson scores well, but his athleticism isn't at the level of some of the other guys in terms of speed, but in terms of technique and finding his shots and being able to land and sneakiness, Nelson's got it. Like, he has really good tools for finding and fitting offense in. Zhang, I thought, you know, got out through good offense early, got into good combos with his hands, got low kicks in here and there. Nelson played with combinations and kicks and spots, just didn't sustain it as much as Zhang did. Round two, I thought that there was a weird call, but I can understand it. Zhang landed a shot as Nelson was off balance. And when Nelson hit the ground, he kind of rolled up. But I think that he was trying to show in the roll that he was okay, you know, more than that he was in trouble. And I think the ref was kind of hesitant, not sure how to call it there. And that's a tough one. You guys have heard me say it on this podcast a million times. It is so tough when you are off balance or on one leg or about to do a strike and you get hit, because it's not necessarily the pain of the shot or the power of the shot that puts you down. Sometimes just right shot, right time. And you know, Nelson went down. They did an 8 count. He was definitely disappointed. And then in the second half of the round, he started to turn it up. Zhang started to fade. But still, the knockdown should have been enough to make sure that Zhang had won the round. Then we go to round three. And this was, without question, all LT Nelson. Nelson was just landing everything in the book, knees after knees, offense. Zhang had burnt out, and everything he was doing was just trying to stay on his feet. The refs in tonight's, there was no points taken from any of the fights. So I think once the fighters got a feel that that wasn't going to happen, there's a good chance that maybe as they were trying to find their rhythm, holding on here and there to buy themselves some time, didn't scare them as much. Sometimes I've known, and that's a ref call thing. I've known refs to step in and be real stern and send it early. I've known refs to let it go a little bit longer. This night, as a community, they went a little bit longer. And Nelson, again, which is, you know, just kind of depends on the fight, but at least they're consistent. So I played American football. And here, if someone, for pass interference, I played cornerback. And corner, sometimes you'll get someone that's like a little bit aggressive of throwing a flag when you play bump and run coverage, you know, when you're trying to jam someone at the line. And sometimes you see that they're a little looser on, you know, pass interference calls. Or in basketball, sometimes they let you play physical underneath and sometimes they're calling it. As long as they're consistent, most people can get a rhythm on it, whether you agree with it or not. And if there's one thing I definitely credit the, you know, the Texas commission for, is they were consistent. They seemed more likely they wanted to let things go more than get involved. Now, again, it just kind of depends on your corner for how you view that. But I really thought that that was what they were trying to do. So as Nelson was really pouring it on and going for the finish and trying to get a knockdown at least, Zhang just held on and held on and get hit and held on. So clearly the other thing that some people wonder about is, do you score that last round 10-8? Because it really was dominant, and I would have scored it 10-8 had I been there. But, you know, the judges have a criteria. They were going off of it. The split came back, which meant that there was some people who saw the 10-8. And, of course, it goes down to how you saw round one as well. But Zhang really did show good skill early in the fight. And even though he faded late, him getting the victory was not like some crime, you know what I'm saying? It's just, you know how it is. The feel of the fight had gone so much in LT's favor at the end of it. So that's the game. Nelson's good. He's going to continue to fight good guys, and we'll see more of him down the road. Zhang, of course, starting to put some wins together. It's a good victory for him. We'll move on with him as well. Ace of 10 pound gets a victory over Nate Richardson, 30-26 in all the cards. You know, Ace really got on the mic and he said he's wondering why people didn't think that he could box. Like, he felt like a lot of people, you know, even the commentary came up and asked him, you know, a lot of people felt that Richardson had the boxing advantage and you had the kicking advantage. And when he heard it, he was offended. You know, like he was like, why do people say that I can box? He is a savvy guy who can score some clean offense. And as a coach, from a technical standpoint, the setup on the knockdown in the second was absolutely beautiful. He landed 1-2, he stepped back, and he used a paw jab to blind his right hand, and that's the shot that caught Richardson. Richardson took a couple of shots that really stunned him and had him in trouble. That one put him in his butt, but if you've ever seen Richardson fight before, he is one of the all-Iron Man fighters in American kickboxing. He gets right back up and goes right back after it. Good combination. When he lets it go, Nate Richardson's combination low kick game is good, and his knee game is good. And in the second round, before he had received the knockdown, Richardson, after, you know, losing a lot of the boxing exchanges and losing in the kickboxing in round one, he'd really start to come on in the second half of that second round. Like, he really started to pick up some offense. Then all of a sudden, the knockdown scores, and it changes the dynamic of the game. But before that shot, you see all the tools that Richardson brings to the table. He's got good pressure. He's got good knees when he's walking you down. He's got good power when he throws, you know, when he lets his hands go. And he's got a good hook low kick game when he does it. It just didn't go his way in those boxing spots. And that made it extremely, extremely difficult for him to get the nod. So, and of course, that's the game. It's always going to be that way a little bit. But Richardson, one of the better fighters in glory. He's even though the win-loss record kind of goes win-loss, win-loss, he's fought some of the toughest guys at both weight classes. Richardson's been putting himself out there. The Pinto fight, that's a split decision, you know what I'm saying? And Gashi, he went down in round one against Gashi, and I remember listening to the crowd. I remember them saying, that kid's going to get knocked out this round. And then all of a sudden, Richardson came back in round two, and in round three, Gashi was holding on while Richardson was coming. And that's at a different weight class. Nate Richardson's got a kickboxing future as long as he stays with it. You know, he's just a fun guy, and we'll see more of him down the road. Asa, again, he talked about how I hope that there's talks, of course, of Glory to go to his hometown, and he's excited to bring the brand there and keep fighting at a high level. And I was really, really pleased with how he performed, and I'm excited to see him always. One of my favorite guys in the company, both guys are. Jason Wellness defeats Jacob Rodriguez by TKO leg kicks. This is one of my favorite performances, and you guys have heard me use this analogy before. Jacob Rodriguez took this fight because he's older, and he didn't know how many opportunities he was going to have to go against someone elite to find out if he could be the best in the world. So when Jason Wellness' opportunity came up, and I brought it up to his camp, they both came back and said, hey, it's not like I've got like 4 or 5 years that I can use to prepare myself to go get someone good. I'm going to prepare myself to go against them now. So he had the run with the USMFT, USA Muay Thai team amateur. So he got some good, opposition there as far as competing for them. He's got a good trainer, Chase Corley. Mike Corley, one of the better trainers in America. And shout out to Corley again for a lot of the help that he did with Glory when we were down there. But, he went out there with the mentality of, I'm going to fight the best with my best. And the example that I always bring up all the time, I always bring up Paul Briggs. Briggs, when he was in Australia, he became world champion. And if you've ever heard John Wayne Parr say it, if you want to be world champion, you just had to go to the state over in Australia. And there was a world champion there. You could fight him. And he came up and he was world champion in Australia. He goes, man, I want to know how I am against the best of the world. Goes to Japan, beats their world champion by knockout. Then he goes, all right, let's go see how I do against the Thai. Goes to Thailand, goes against Jamad, loses by low kicks. After he lost by low kicks, he said, I wanted to know where I stood with the best in the world. I saw that I was better than the best guy in Japan. I was not even close to being better than the best guy in Thailand, but I needed to feel it. I needed to know. And Paul Briggs became one of the best fighters, ended up being have a great boxing career. But I like that Briggs made the decision of, I got to find out who I am in this game. I got to dare to be great. And Jacob Rodriguez dared to be great against Jason Wellness, who once held the Glory strap, who is a big, strong, solid kickboxer who knows what he's doing. He's gone against elite guys. Jacob Rodriguez, he's just at the stage. He wasn't going to have that opportunity. And He took it, and he went out there, and he brought it in round one. Definitely was clean with his technique. If there's one thing you want from your coach, no matter what the effort, you want your guy to reflect high skill. And Jacob Rodriguez really showed high skill, good combination kick flow. He just didn't have an answer for consistent low kicks that were coming from Jason Wellness. And a lot of people, you know, if you ever hear the term just check the kicks, you're probably not talking to someone who knows kickboxing. Because just checking the kicks is so much harder when the variety of kicks come so consistently. It's weird because in MMA, there's not as many kicks thrown, so you can actually eat some of the low kicks unless you're going against Aldo or Barbosa and not be in a lot of trouble. But in kickboxing, when they get into that flow, you've got, like, within the first few kicks to show that you're going to have an answer for checking, or else you're going to have trouble for a long night. Like, it's just kind of how it's going to be. And I think Wilna showed his veteran savvy, was able to withstand Jacob Rodriguez when he had those strong offensive spots. But then in the end of the fight, he was able to pick up, and he scored an inside low kick stoppage, which is really rare to do. So good stuff for him. Good stuff for both guys. Really good fight. And shout out to the crowd. Jacob Rodriguez was one of the bigger ticket sellers in the area, and they all came and supported their guy. So good stuff there. Matt Baker continues his run. He gets a KO victory over Riot Waller, TKO. You know, Baker, I joke with him every time I see him. I go, man, I keep forgetting how tall you are. You know, he's a legit 6'6", and he looks like a heavyweight almost when you see him on fight night. For sure, he could have success at the middleweight division or the light heavyweight division because he's so tall. But really, it was kind of an opposite performance from what I'm used to from Riot Waller. Waller usually comes, finds his rhythm, picks up offense, and then scores big shots later in the third round. Whereas this time, Riot kind of got going early, looked to throw some combinations and some low kicks, threw power, really looked to bring the fight to Baker. And Baker was patient, waited through the storm, walked Riot Waller down, and was able to land some big shots with Waller's back was to the ropes. Eventually, he was able to score a couple downs, and he was able to get the finish. Just the length and the consistency, Baker brings it. You know, again, another guy who's with Dan Black, one of the better trainers in America. He's going to just keep winning and fighting and growing, and he's doing a good job. So shout out to Matt Baker. Really good stuff with him there. Riot Waller. You know, it's just you come out, you win by spectacular KO in your first one, you lose by KO in the next one. It's the game that we're in, and it's just back to the drawing board. Get in the gym, keep working hard, and you're going to have another opportunity. But this, you know, Clay, this guy who works in the commission, he works for ISK, and he goes international, and he does a lot with helping the rules. And he says something interesting in most of the Glory events. He usually says, half of this room is going to go home a loser. And it's crazy because we don't think about it, but, you know, sometimes it's you on the other end of it. And Waller, it was him on the other end of it this time. Back to the gym, work hard, he'll have another opportunity, and go out there and show his skill. Matt Baker will continue to climb up the middleweight ranks, and another opportunity is coming his way as well. Bailey Sugden goes against Quad Taranaki. You know, Taranaki, he's got a lot of tools, but so far it's just about letting him go. You know, like his hook low kick is good. His cross hook low kick is good. His counter kick game is good. But he just didn't have it in spots. He was looking to try to score big shots in between. But for the most part, he wasn't sustaining the kickboxing. He's capable of doing it. It just hasn't happened in his two Glory fights. Now, we went against Cesaro Glunder in the first one. So really, really tough opposition there. Bailey Sugden came out, and Bailey was himself. Bailey gets into he finds spots where he can throw punches and bunches. Really bites down on the mouthpiece, really lets the hooks and crosses go, and literally he'll throw bah, 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 like five or six shots, and people are trying to time something in between, but he'll just bite down on the mouthpiece, stay with it, go back to the pressure, looks for switch kicks, looks for spinning shots. Him and his dad have a good rapport. His dad will yell something like jumping knee or spinning whatever, and then he'll just give it a shot. He was able to win all three rounds clear here. Very end of the fight, he gave us a good little highlight, even though he missed it. His dad said, yelled for him to try like a spinning something. He was like, just go ahead and add it to, like, with the last 10 seconds. He goes ahead and goes high kick, and then he goes jumping, spinning wheel kick, and it was just a lot of fun to watch. You know, he's out there having fun. Shout out to Bailey Sugden. He came off a loss, so he was trying to bounce back, so good for him. Quad Taranaki, we will see him down the road. Just wasn't his night this night. Next fight on the card, Becker Irwin gets a victory over Stephanie Skinner. Now, of course, you guys, if you followed the broadcast at all, there's a lot of buzz behind Becker Irwin. She's legit 18 years old. Literally, I've been talking with her and her coach, Chase Corley, for about, you know, a year before we were able to sign her. And I found out when her birthday was, and I was like, hey, we got to go to Houston, and we got to bring it because of this girl. You know, I was like, you know, saying this is a girl who I really want to see her get the opportunity and glory. And I think that she's a good fighter. She had a great amateur career. She's got 3 world championships, and that was a smaller weight class. So then she moves up to fight and thinks she's 119, and our weight class limits around the 121 mark. So that's just her walk-around weight. So she comes in, fight week, doing the interviews. My favorite thing about Becca, as I mentioned before, you know, as far as talking to her, going back and forth as far as contract goes, is Becca is very much a teenager. When I'm around her, I feel like she's a teenager. I feel like the way she answers things and her, you know, that awkwardness and that excitement, like it's all of someone younger. But on fight night, when she walks out to the ring, all of a sudden, the killer was there. Like, you could see the difference in her face. And I was like, that was awesome. Like, that's even before the fight had happened. Stephanie Skinner, MMA girl who sent me a message on Facebook. She's like, man, I'd like to do kickboxing. You know, I've fought MMA and I do well on the feet, but I've struggled with the takedown defense. And I just want to see if I can do sports where I can do kickboxing. And she had a boxing match. I watched her win that. And then she got injured because it was like a one-night tournament. And the next fight, so it's like boxing, Muay Thai, and then MMA in the last one. So she was injured, so she couldn't do the Muay Thai fight. But I had a decent amount of content, see her stand-up skill. And Becca, technically, because that, you know, the IFMAS is still pro-am or AMI, you know, she didn't have a pro resume. It would still be considered her pro debut. So I had to match someone accordingly. The commission was able to allow this one to happen, which I was grateful for. And they put on a good fight. You know, Becca showed the tools. You see the high kick. You see the punches and bunches that she would score in spots. She kept trying the spinning back kick, or back fist. Stephanie Skinner would close the distance, looking to score the overhand right. She would kick here and there, but for the most part, didn't sustain the consistent offense I know she was looking to score. Becker had a really good moment in round 2 where the head kick came behind Stephanie's block. She put on some good, strong offense right after it happened. And then she looked to close the show, if you will, with after she heard, she went, she looked for a lot of step-up knees, and she looked to finish the fight. But Stephanie was all game, really strong. Round 3, Irwin had got up on the first half of the round. Skinner kept pushing the pace. Both looked a little tired at that point. Skinner wasn't able to land the Sunday punch she was looking for. So she came up short in a 30-27 fight. But the biggest thing was, you know, my biggest takeaway was the crowd response to Becca Irwin. Like, the crowd was into everything of the fight. And the response they had after the fight and when she was announced as the winner. And it was really cool for us as people who want to see kickboxing do well in America to see the crowd respond to her in such a way. That was really, really cool. So shout out to Becca Irwin. You really did good stuff. And shout out to Stephanie Skinner, who stepped into a new sport. And, of course, I'm going to use you both. Abraham Vidalis gets the victory over Jamichi Ivy. Again, just Ivy, one of those things where he's performed better in the past. The guy's got an MMA background. He's got some kickboxing fights, just had some gaps in between them. And the big thing that I sure that if he could revisit it, he would like to string more offense together. Because Dmitry really did show good technique when he did throw, but he didn't throw that much, which allowed Abraham Vidalis to get into his combination and body kick game. Scored like some good kicks, good switch kicks, good low kicks. Everything came together. Vidalis ended up going 3 takedowns in the second round to really put together a great performance. He had a good crowd that all came to support him. They had the Vidalis hats on, and he really has, I mean, at 23, 24 years old, he's got the skill to be one of the faces of North America in kickboxing down the road. Very talented guy. Good combination and kick flow. I love being around him. Love talking to him. You know, his English is good. He's a good talent. Glad that he got the victory here to beat you, Ivory. We'll see him back in the glory ring again. Just didn't go his way the first one. And both guys expect to see more of them in glory down the road. Joe Taylor defeats Ivan Glass, split decision. This is a tougher one, a fight. Joe Taylor played with a lot of explosive things, jumping knees, wide shots. Ivan Glass, they focused on the low kick game. I had no idea which way the scorecards were going to go. The judges favored Taylor and his aggression and his jumping knees. He is now 2-1 in glory. I know he really was pushing for this victory because he said when I saw him, he goes, "Thank you for getting me out of New York," just in terms of he wanted to fight in other places, you know, and he came out, showed good aggression. Glass is still a good fighter. He's got good combinations, good low kick game. He worked good, smooth technique, but Taylor, such an unorthodox guy to get a reread on. Taylor gets the win. Demario Dennis, after losing several opponents, ends up getting a victory over James Chapman. Demario Dennis put together his cleanest performance as a kickboxer in this fight. Chapman came in, of course, on short notice, but he came in, he offered a lot of offense, a lot of combination and kick flow, and Dennis just kind of weighed, you know, stayed calm. And if there's one thing I will say for Chapman, when the loss came, I don't think the loss came as a product of him being tired. I just think it came from Demario Dennis with really well-timed low kicks, hook low kick game, played with the switch kick here and there, played with the high kick here and there. Really got some good damage done in round one, and we go out in round two, cross, lead, uppercut, head kick. That sent James Chapman down, got him in trouble. Dennis then closed the distance, looked to score shots to kind of put the fight away. Chapman wasn't able to find his bearings, and the fight was stopped in the second round. Demario Dennis has been in this game for a long time, and he's been on the other end of it most of the time in his glory run. Short notice fights where he was stopped. And, you know, everybody talks about the Guto loss, you know, because of the spinning hook kick. And you know, Chai Lewis Perry, again, he wasn't even supposed to be fighting Chai Lewis Perry. But some things, you know, fell apart. And he jumped in there because he's game and he's down to fight anybody. Demario Dennis goes out there, gets his first glory win. He did it the right way. Took some time away. He went out to Holland. Mike's gym got the feel of going against elite-level kickboxers. Played with the Dutch style of offense. He developed good skill. Came back, took some fights here and there, some MMA, some kickboxing. This opportunity came up for Marshall. He took it. Marshall dropped. They needed a replacement, and he was down to take that too. You know what I'm saying? Like just he just wanted to fight, and it all worked out for him. So shout out to Mario Dennis for the victory. Kulig gets a victory over Savin Kesesam, one of the more fun kickboxing battles in the fight. Savin Kesesam has got such good offense when he's in space. His combination low kick flow is really, really good because he's a quick kid. Ku really played the pressure game. He's got a big low kick chop too, really closed the distance, played with a lot of walking down, scoring right hands. The whole game was for him to keep pressuring so that if Sam was going to score, Sam was going to score with his back to the ropes. And Ku was able to get significant offense, was able to slowly score more and more each round. Got good combination low kick flow, would land heavy boxing with Sam's back to the ropes, and scored a knockdown in the third. After the knockdown, Savin Kesesam had one more last gasp. He did a jumping knee that landed clean on Ku. And the moment it landed, Ku landed a right hand right afterwards. He was down to bang it out all fight. You know, again, 35 years old, and Savin Kesesam being 24 years old, Ku realizing, as we talked about it with Rodriguez, the time is now. And put on a good performance. He was able to get a victory 30-26 on two cards and 29-27. One of my favorite fights from a technical standpoint on this card was Peter Stanenyk versus Kamane Diop. And it was a split decision. It really could have gone either way. I don't have a problem with the decision going in any direction because the rounds were that close. But Peter Stanenyk really did a good job of single kick power, playing with boxing and step knees and spots. Diop, same thing. Boxing, the clean single kicks, and then he would have moments where he'd push the pace, land offense, and do some step knees. I looked over at Marshall and Robbie Timmers, you know, right before the fight started, and I said, hey, this fight is going to be a technical gem, and these guys did not let me down. They both went out there and showed exceptional skill, clean offense. Shout out to both guys. It's what you want from high-level kickboxing, and I keep telling people, man, America, we got some talent. You know, we just got to keep getting these guys fights, and then the opportunities will come. So look out for both guys, you know, at 70 kgs, 154 pounds. Good stuff for both. Really, really, really exceptional high-level fight, and go watch it if you haven't seen it. Last fight is Sean Choice versus Justin Moss. Again, this was very, very similar to the LT Nelson-Zhang fight. Sean Choi's had the hot start. He's got the single kicks. He plays with boxing and space. Really, really good athlete. He came and he brought a really good fight early. Justin Moss withstood that early barrage, took a standing eight. Round two started to pick up his offense a little bit. Round three, Choice was tired and Moss was coming. So Moss really landed some good offense. One without the knockdown, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, the scorecards, it's kind of mumbled in my head. But Justin Moss, I think that someone maybe gave him a 10-8 and then called it 28-28 after round one. And then I think 29-27 was the overwhelming scorecard, the judges only giving Moss the third and then clearly giving Choice the first two rounds. So good stuff by both guys, really good, entertaining kickboxing card. You know, hopefully see more from most of those athletes down the road. And thank you very much for letting me be a part of your careers and watching you guys compete at a high level. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to tell you, I'm at MuayThaiPros.com. And they've got a list of the top 10 Muay Thai fighters of all time. I am going to go down the top five of this list, okay? Just the top five. The list is 10, but I'm going to do just the top five, okay? Going to go ahead and spend some time, and hopefully you guys enjoy the podcast. And I will tell you why these guys are considered the best all-time Muay Thai fighters. Now, this is full rules Muay Thai. So for people who are listening to this and they're like, well, you didn't mention yada, 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 there's a reason. It's because I'm only going off of full rules Muay Thai. I'm talking elbows and knees and acceptable clinch and so on, okay? First of all, number five on their list is San Chai. San Chai really is a living legend. Here's my thing. It's not that just that he was the reporters or the writers Fighter of the Year in Thailand twice. It's the separation in the years, you know what I'm saying? To have one in, you know, 1999, and they have the other one in, you know, 2011 or 12. I'm trying to remember what it is off the top of my head. It's just amazing. And he's not old, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's still, like, you know, 33 or something like that. You know, or well, he's heading into his mid-30s. I'll change that. He's heading into his mid-30s. But he's still amazing. He still fights a bajillion times a year. He still puts on a show. He goes and does seminars. San Chai is the truth, man. He is an amazing, amazing performer, and I always want to see him fight. Fought all over the world. Fought people in their hometowns. He brought Intertech. I mean, he's got so many Lumpini champions on his resume. One of my favorite things that he's done is he went up in weight, and a lot of people felt like he beat Fabio Pinca. Pinca got the nod in that fight. After that fight, which was at 147, he then went back to fight in the stadium against... what was it? As a Kunk? Oh man, I'm forgetting the name right now. But he went back and he fought at 126 pounds. So to go from 147 to then come back to the stadiums and fight at 126 pounds, it's just insane. And he won. And that's what he did for a long time. Not to forget, there's the, he beat two guys in, you know, one fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's that kind of stuff. You know, Pechpunchu was one of the guys. I can't remember who the other one was. I felt like it was like a Pecorn or something like that. But he beat two guys in one night, you know, in one fight. And he has just the imagination is something that I talk about a lot. When people do things that go outside of what you thought was possible in a combat sport. The jumping inside low kick. That's insane. Who does a jumping inside low kick? The handstand kick. I remember he always described it as, it's an old school technique that not a lot of people do that I try to do in fights. I was like, it's a handstand kick. You know what I'm saying? Don't give me old school Muay brand. It's an amazing feat that you're doing a handstand kick in a fight. Just absolutely awesome. And then, of course, there's the footage of him, you know, knocking the guy out cold with the technique. Just, he is something else. San Chai. All-time great. And as I mentioned before, it's all things included. It's not just the fight resume. Everybody in this on this list has beaten a lot of high-level guys. That's not. It's stretching the imagination. It's this can't be stopped. It's you can do anything. It's I can't believe I just saw that. That's what San Chai brings to the table. He is number five. Semrock Kamsing. He's just special. First of all, he won gold as a boxer. He was, you know, number one in both stadiums, Lumpini and the Raja Stadium. Raja Bunnerm, so if people want to know, Rajadan's another way I've heard it pronounced. But, like, he is one of the all-time greats. he just fought so many elite guys, and he was just one of the more dominant fighters of his era. I think that he's a guy who not as many have seen unless you really put the time in. But, man, he's just – Samrock was amazing. Amazing fighter. I'm fine with him being in the top four, even though in my own experience and being in love with kickboxing and Muay Thai, he's not a guy that I went to watch a lot. There were other people that I preferred over him. But I really, really think Samrock had a great career, and he's one of the better fighters in, you know, one of the strongest times in stadium fighting. So shout out to him. And then there was fun. I'll never forget 2012 when he had the million baht fight with Jamad. Two guys from, you know, closer to the golden era of full rules Muay Thai in Thailand, and then they did that fight later in their career. It's crazy to see him because he's still awesome. You know what I'm saying? Just has so many tools. Number three on their list is Ibijet Sithiran. This one right here, he was awarded Fighter of the Century. He passed away, I want to say 2013. It wasn't that old. 72, but still, you know, solid run, but not that old. He was amazing. And he fought, and again, just, he was an amazing fighter in what we call the Golden Age. So the Golden Age of Muay Thai, if you guys haven't heard that term before, it usually refers to the late 80s, and I would even say through most of the 90s, at least through 98, I'd say through most of the 90s. It was just a period of time where the purses were high and the fights were won more off of effective striking, more so than off of ring generalship and dominance. So the clinch started to get rewarded really heavily because they see it as you are physically dominating and controlling the other guy. But as you can imagine, in doing that, the same thing works against you. In doing that process, it means that if you're a good clincher, you can set down offense and make for fights that people aren't as into. The betting isn't as high. People want to see people throwing a lot of effective offense. And Apadej, in his, you know, heyday, I really think that he was a great fighter in a great era. And he kind of moved us into, his era moved us into what we would call the Golden Age. I feel like he set the stage and moved us into the growth that became it. So sometimes it's, as I said before, it's doing something that we did not see in the sport or doing something for the sport that takes it beyond. So some people are familiar with Gina Carano. I think that if you look at some of the women that are successful now, it took a Gina Carano to do that, no matter how you feel about her fight resume. And she's done some good things in fighting. You know, she had some really good fights. And I know a lot of people are like, well, she's physically attractive. That's where she got these opportunities. I still think that if you look at her role and the fights that she had and the wins that she came up with, they are a huge product of how she became what she is and how MMA became what it is. They really got that going. So I look at that, look where that led us to, and really, really strong stuff for the history of the sport based off of that. When I look at Ibijet Sithiran, I think that he is most important for moving us into what we call the Golden Age. There were great fighters before, but something about his career set up to pay the stage for those great fighters. So APIDEJ SIT Hirun, HIRUN. We then move into our final two. Diesel Noi Choi, Thanet Sakorn, Sakorn. Diesel Noi, not only do I like him, you know, as a fighter, but he had one of the great highlights when I first fell in love with the sport. He is a knee killer. If you look at, if you want to teach anyone, how do I get good in the clinch? How do I get good with knees? You got to sit them down and have them watch some Diesel Noi. Go ahead and spell that out in case you guys are, it's coming off unclear. DIESELNOI. Just put that in and you'll see Chor, you know, come up right afterward. But Diesel Noi, he's just an amazing fighter, brought an amazing aggressive pace. And again, he's got, you know, huge win in his career, you know, over, you know, Smart and some of the other guys. He was amazing. I still think he is the standard, maybe the all-time greatest fighter with clinch and knees. Like, I still think he stands alone. And he did it in the Golden Age, and that matters. When you do it, matters. Diesel Noir was special. He's an awesome fighter. If you have a Hall of Fame somewhere, he's got to be in your Hall of Fame. He is an amazing, amazing fighter. Number one on their list, and this could be going no other way, Samart Kayakorun. Samart is all I've known him as, you know what I'm saying? Just his gym association didn't matter much to me. He is the guy. He is the legend. I can go through tournaments and all of that, but like, he even went on to have a 21-2 boxing career, and he was a WBC champion there. He has 4 Olympian title belts. It's just more than just that. It's the era that he was champion in. Muay Thai pros, they use the term that he's the Muhammad Ali of Muay Thai. And I would take that. I don't believe that there's a Muhammad Ali in Muay Thai. Like there's no one who I think takes the role of exceptional fighter along with what they meant in, you know, the community. And, of course, if you guys have ever talked to me in person or if you ever heard me talk about combat sports in general, I don't think Ali's the greatest boxer of all time. I think he's the greatest heavyweight boxer of all time. I think Sugar Ray Robinson is the best boxer of all time. As far as with my eyes have seen, he's the ultimate, you know, alpha predator in boxing. So shout out to this list and the people who put their minds behind it, because putting Samart number one, it's almost like something that has to happen. He's a different feel. He had a look about him. I mean, he is the it guy. He's the number one guy. Easy one to remember, Samart. Go check him out. He's a very, very exceptional fighter. I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. I can go ahead and run off that the rest of those lists for people who want to know who they are. Namsak Noy, he was on the list. Pudpad Noy, Wururut, he was kind of in the earlier days. I mean, fighting back, their headline says he's 14 years old and he fought for 50 cents, 15 baht back in the day. So just one of the greats when there wasn't a lot of money in this game, but 15 cents probably went a little bit further back then. Nam Kaboan, Nunki Payut, that was number 8. And then number 7 was Kainsak Sor Plechit. And then number 6 was Tongchai Tor Selachai. So that was the rest of the list. But one more time to repeat, Sanchai, number 5. Samrock, number 4. Ipadej, number 3. Diesel Noy, number 2. And Samart, number 1. They had an honorable mention, but Kyle's on the list. I don't think when it comes to full rules Muay Thai that he would be on my list for all time, you know, just me personally. Raymond Decker's on the list. Again, as far as Forang goes, and that's a podcast for another day, definitely a person to have is notable for their run. And then Kuban, of course, was the other back and forth as far as the greats go. Kuban and Raymond Decker's had their big battles. So that wraps up the podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. I will try not to have the gap as big next time. Try to do Monday, but I tell you, this promoting thing, it's fun, but it's also super, super busy. So thank you all for listening. God bless and have a good one. Peace.